Let's read from God's Word as we turn to Matthew chapter 24. It's a long chapter, so we're taking several selections out of the chapter because really all of it is relevant to what we're thinking about today as we look again at the Bible and the future. We'll be reading, first of all, from verse 1. It's getting near the end of Jesus' ministry on earth. And they're in Jerusalem, they've been in the temple, and as they're walking away, the disciples start to ask important questions of Jesus. Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came up to him to call his attention to its buildings. "Do you see all these things?" he asked. "I tell you the truth, no, not one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down." As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. "Tell us," they said, "when all this will happen, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" Jesus answered, "Watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name declaring, 'I am the Christ,' and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pains. Then you will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death. And you will be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other. And many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But he who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come." And Jesus recounts dramatic events, seem to be about the fall of Jerusalem that happened when the Romans attacked in AD 70. Then we pick up again in verse 29. "Immediately after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. At that time, the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and all the nations of the earth will mourn. They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory." Then moving down to verse 42, Jesus, I mean, speaking about the fact that the day of his return is unknown, it will come suddenly and unexpectedly. Verse 42, "Therefore keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would not have let his house be broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him." As the end of another year approaches, it's hard to believe that we are approaching the end of another year. It's frightening. There will be all kinds of articles published, programs on television, material on the internet, looking ahead to the coming year. They'll be looking back and evaluating what's happened in 2017, but what does 2018 hold? And experts, or supposed experts at least, will be trying to predict what might happen at home and abroad. What might 2018 hold for us, for people of other parts of the world? They'll be surveying the contemporary scene. They'll be trying to discern signs that would guide as to what the future ahead might be. And they'll be looking at economic factors and political factors and so forth, and looking for signs that might tell us what 2018 holds. Now, some of the predictions might turn out to be quite accurate. Sometimes they are. Others will be so wide of the mark, you'll wonder why these are called experts at all. There'll be a whole range, accurate, inaccurate, truth, falsehood, as people look ahead and try and discern what lies ahead. And of course, trying to read the signs can be a very risky occupation. It's a very uncertain business, given our limited understanding of what's happening at the minute, never mind what could happen. And some have been very, very wrong in what they thought the future held. If we think of signs regarding the future, we hear Jesus' words as rebuke, really, to the scribes and the Pharisees in Matthew 16 and verse 3. Jesus says to the scribes and Pharisees, "You know how to interpret the appearance of the sky," kind of red sky at night and so on, no doubt, "but you cannot interpret the signs of the times." And clearly Jesus believed that this was something, the signs of the times, that they ought to have been able to interpret. He's rebuking them for not doing so. Evidently, there are signs that had contemporary significance in Jesus' own day. And yet, as we look at what the Bible has to say about signs of the times, we'll see also that they have a very important future dimension. So as we continue to think about the Bible and the future, we're looking today at the signs of the times. And this is really part one. God willing, we'll come back and look a bit more at what is a big and a very important subject next Lord's Day. So, signs of the times, part one. And the first thing that we need to establish is the nature of the signs. The nature of the signs. Well, obviously, Jesus' rebuke there in Mark 16, "You're not able to interpret the signs of the times," it shows us that there are signs that were relevant to Jesus' first hearers, to the scribes, the Pharisees, others who were listening to his preaching. There were signs that they should have been able to interpret, and they weren't able to do it. What kind of signs were they? Well, they were signs relating to Jesus' identity and his ministry. The scribes and the Pharisees, especially men who knew their Bibles, ought to have been able to discern the indications of who Jesus really was, to see he was the Messiah, to understand the kind of ministry that he had come to fulfill. There were signs they should have been able to see. And not only the scribes and Pharisees. Very interesting, when John the Baptist was in prison, and he's depressed and he's discouraged, and John is wondering, is this the Messiah? He sent the message to Jesus, "Are you the one who is to come, or should we be looking for somebody else?" Remember how Jesus responded, the message he sent back to John the Baptist in prison. Matthew 11:5, Jesus reminds him, "The blind receive sight, the lame walk, the good news is preached to the poor." There were signs that John had seen and should have understood as indicating Jesus as the Messiah. And the scribes and Pharisees, likewise, as they watched the miracles Jesus performed, they should have seen the signs. They should have recognized who he was and what he had come to do. The signs were there to guide those who had the eyes of faith to see who Jesus was, that he was truly the promised Messiah. And so the Savior rebukes scribes and Pharisees. They didn't understand. They saw these things, but they couldn't interpret them. And so they refused to believe in Jesus. And it's very interesting, especially in John's Gospel, that Jesus' miracles are often described as signs. You have it when he changed the water into wine at Cana, beginning of his public ministry in John 2. This first sign Jesus performed. So the miracles that Jesus performed were signs. Signs pointing to who he is and what he came to do. So there were signs that had, if you like, a contemporary significance for Jesus' own day. But that isn't the whole story by any means. Because as we read the Gospels, and particularly as we turn to a passage like Matthew 24, it becomes clear there's also a huge future dimension to the signs of which Jesus spoke. The signs of the times also had a future significance. And that comes out especially in this block of teaching that Jesus gives his disciples. You have it in Matthew 24, it's in Mark 13, it's in Luke 21. Do you notice that three times this is recorded? And if the Lord sees fit to tell us something three times in three of the Gospels, that lets you know this is hugely important. God doesn't repeat himself for no reason. So this is important. And Jesus sits with his disciples in the Mount of Olives. Sometimes this is called the Olivet Discourse, or the little apocalypse, the little revelation, because it deals with many of the things you find in the big apocalypse in the book of Revelation at the end of the Bible. So Jesus sits down with his disciples. They have been talking about the temple. What a fantastic building. Huge stones. Jesus says there will not be one of those stones left standing. I think, what does he mean? That sounds awful. We need an explanation. So they come to Jesus and he sits down with them and begins to answer their questions. And the key question there in Matthew 24 and verse 3, they ask, when will this happen? And what will be the signs of your coming and of the end of the age? You notice that? It includes the end of the age. And Jesus doesn't say to them, oh, no, the signs don't relate to the end of the age. But he goes on and he speaks of signs, of significant events. Clearly they include his return and the end of the age. There's no misunderstanding that. Jesus' answer embraces the whole course of history from that day as he sat with his disciples right through to his second coming. And all of that is there in Matthew 24. And the Lord speaks of a variety of signs. We look, God willing, next week in more detail at some of these signs, but just to mention them in a general way. He speaks about tragedies, maybe as good a label as any, wars and rumors of wars, famines, earthquakes in various places, verse 7. And he says that's the beginning of birth pains. And for the rabbis, birth pains spoke about the coming of the Messiah, the great day they were looking forward to when the Messiah would be revealed. Jesus says, that's what we're talking about. There were tragedies. There were signs that dealt with the growth of evil. You'll be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, he says in verse 9. Many will turn away from the faith, verse 10. Many false prophets will appear. In many ways, it's a horrendous list. The Lord speaks of a fearful time for believers. The love of most will grow cold, verse 12. So there are signs that speak about the growth of evil. But there are also signs that speak about the spread of the gospel. This gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the world, and then the end will come. So yes, there will be growth of evil, but the picture is not all gloom. But rather, there'll be a great time for the gospel. Both will go on together. The growth of evil and the spread of the gospel will continue. Then we think, how are we to hold all of that together? How are we to make sense of all of this? It seems confusing. There are signs that seem to say there'll be a rosy future. There are signs that seem to say there'll be a terrible future. How do we make sense of this? What role do these signs of the times play in the Bible's view of the future? And that's what we need to think about next. So we thought about the nature of the signs. There were those that relate to Jesus' day, but there are signs that relate to the future right through to his return in glory. There are tragedies. There's the growth of evil. There's the spread of the gospel. So how do we make sense of all of that? There are Christians, of course, who think we can't and just throw up their hands in despair and give up. But we shouldn't do that. The Lord clearly expects us to have some understanding of what he's saying here. So having looked at the nature of the signs, we need to look now at the ambiguity of the signs. The ambiguity of the signs. Maybe that's a relief, because you think, well, if they're ambiguous, maybe there's an excuse for me not understanding them too well. But this isn't an accident. This is how God has designed the signs of the times to be. The ambiguity of the signs. Notice in verse 36 of Matthew 24. No one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. Only the Father knows the time of Christ's return. Now, we're talking about, of course, Christ's human nature. He didn't know. In his divine mind, of course, he knew all things. So he says, nobody knows the day. Nobody knows the time when the Son will come back again. And yet, the talk of the signs is significant. Clearly, it doesn't enable us to fix a time of the Lord's return. We'll never be in a position of saying, in 6 months, the Lord's coming back again. We'll not be able to say, well, it'll be another 10 years before Christ returns. We are never put in a position where we can work out timings, no matter what study we give to this. And yet, of course, there are Christians who seem to think they can work out timetables and detailed charts if they studied it hard, especially if they have an interest in prophetic events. You can buy books in Christian bookshops that won't tell you exactly the date of the Lord's return, but boy, they're coming mighty close, because they've got it all figured out in detail. But clearly that is not how the Lord intends it to be. We'll always be in a position of uncertainty as to when the Lord comes back. We'll never be able to figure out in detail a date or a time when Christ will return. And yet signs are given. What's happening? Well, we have to conclude that there is a God-ordained, deliberate ambiguity about the signs of the times. This is how God designed them to be. They reveal a certain amount. They point to things that will take place. Absolutely, certainly, these things will take place. Things that will characterize Christ's coming and the end of the age, just what the disciples were asking about. There will be signs indicating these things, but not with such clarity that we will be able to set dates or draw up a detailed timetable. That's what we mean by the ambiguity of the signs. They are real. They will happen. The Lord speaks of them. They will precede his return. But we do not ever find ourselves in a position where we can in detail say, this is happening, and therefore it'll be a certain length of time till the Lord comes back. God will not allow us to be in that position. It's not an accident that there is a certain ambiguity in the signs. That's how the Lord designed them, for his purposes. They reveal a certain amount that we are to understand, but they hide other things that we are not meant to know, and we are not meant to know precisely the day and the hour of the Lord's return. And so Christians are always living in that situation where we know a certain amount, and there are the signs the Lord has given us, but there are things we don't know, can't know, and won't know until they happen. Now, we might want to know more. At times we probably do. We wish the Lord had told us more about these things, but very deliberately he hasn't. He tells us so much, and then he stops. So the signs are real, they are there, we are to discern them, but they don't enable us to know days and hours and fix in detail when the Lord is coming. No matter whether some sincere Christians think they can figure it out in a remarkable amount of detail. There are the signs that Jesus spoke of in Matthew 16 and here in Matthew 24 that relate to Jesus' own day. The things the scribes and Pharisees should have understood. And he talks, I believe, in Matthew 24 also about the disaster for the Jewish people in AD 70. When the Jews had rebelled, the Romans marched in and they just destroyed Jerusalem. They destroyed the temple. That's why the Jews in Jerusalem today have only a wailing wall. They don't have a temple. Because the Romans destroyed the rest of it in AD 70. It was a national calamity. It was the end of a Jewish state, effectively, till the 20th century. So there were signs for Jesus' own day about who he was as Messiah. There are signs in Matthew 24 about the fall of Jerusalem, and I believe the part from verse 15 relates to that. To get out of the city, flee to the mountains, get away before disaster comes. And there were Christians in Jerusalem in AD 70 who did that. And they saw the danger coming and they escaped before the disaster really hit. So you've got signs for Jesus' own day, you've got signs for AD 70, and you've got signs that very clearly relate to the second coming of Christ, where he talks about the end of the age. Verse 29 onwards, there the sign of the Son of Man in the sky. You'll see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. If that isn't the second coming, I don't know what it is. It's the return of Christ. So you see, all of that is packed into Matthew 24. Parts of it relate to Jesus' day. Parts of it relate to AD 70 and the fall of Jerusalem. And parts of it relate to the return of Christ at the end of history. And of course, it is complicated. And good Bible scholars do disagree at times as to what parts of Matthew 24 do tie in to the fall of Jerusalem and what parts do relate to the second coming of Jesus. And there are times we're maybe not entirely sure. There is ambiguity in the signs. Some have been fulfilled, some certainly haven't. Some we're maybe not entirely sure about. But then you think of some of the signs that Jesus mentioned. There are wars and rumors of wars, famines, earthquakes. But you say, we always have those. All through history there are wars and rumors of wars and earthquakes and famines. You have the spread of the gospel. That's always been going on. And so we have to ask, well, how would we know when we've reached the final wars and famines and earthquakes before Christ's return? How would we be sure this is it? Because there have always been wars. There always will be. There have always been famines. There will be. How would we know this is the very end? Here are the final wars and famines and earthquakes. When would we know? When the gospel has been preached in the whole world? Would it have to be in every nation? How would we know that? And the answer is, we won't. We won't. We will always have to be asking. As we see wars, we hear of famines, we see the gospel spreading. Is the return of the Lord approaching? Are we near the end? We will not be sure. I believe towards the end, as the day of Christ's return approaches, these signs will intensify. Let me think a little of this next week. That the growth of evil will be even worse, and the spread of the gospel will be even more glorious as the return of Christ approaches. Both, I believe, will happen towards the end. The signs will intensify, but we'll never be able to say, this is it. The Lord is about to come. We'll always have to be saying, he may come. We see wars, we hear of famines, we see the gospel spread, we hear false prophets. All the years between Christ's first and second comings have all of those things. So we're always having to be on the alert. We can never sit back complacently and say, it'll be years before Christ comes back. We don't need to worry about it. Because always the signs are prodding us. Could this be it? Could these be the last wars? Could these be the final famines before the Son of Man appears in the clouds in glory? Could it be? And the Lord never allows us to sit back and be sure and say, it's okay. Won't happen for a while yet. We don't need to worry about it. There's always an ambiguity in the signs. There are signs of Jesus' first coming. Think of the prophecies, birth in Bethlehem, all of those things. And yet, those who knew their Bibles, the scribes, the Pharisees, didn't recognize him when he came. Many of the signs and the prophets were fulfilled in ways they didn't expect. And no doubt it'll be like that when Christ comes back. The signs will all be fulfilled, but it'll maybe not be in ways we anticipated. Maybe we'll be looking at each other and saying, I didn't realize that's how it would happen. I'm sure we will. I'll see you there. We'll talk about it. It'll be glorious. We'll be gloriously wrong in some things. But the Lord will come back and every sign will be fulfilled. But we never can date, set, timetable, sit back complacently. There's always an ambiguity in the signs, and that is how God wills it to be. And it leads us finally to think of the call of the signs. The call of the signs. We've touched on this, but we need to pin it down. What then is the function of the signs? Why has the Lord given them? It's not to confuse us. It's not to give us an intellectual game to play with each other, trying to figure out this sign, that sign, the other sign. The Lord has given us this instruction about the signs of the times to cultivate a certain mindset in Christians. That's why we are given the signs of the times. It's God's will that we develop a certain mindset. What is that mindset? Well, the signs call, first of all, for watching. For watching. Therefore, keep watch because you do not know. Keep watch or keep awake. Another translation, the Greek word that gives us the boy's name, Gregory. Awake. Jesus says, stay awake. In many ways, that is the chief function of these signs. It's to keep Christians awake. that we never become complacent, that we never think, ah, there's no chance the Lord's coming back anyway soon. We're always to be spiritually alert. We're to be using the means of grace, Bible reading, prayer, fellowship, to keep strong in the faith, to battle against temptation with the help of the Holy Spirit. We're always to be spiritually active and alive and growing in grace. The signs are to keep us watching. 1 Peter 4:7, be clear-minded and self-controlled so that you can pray. That interesting, Peter highlights prayer. In the light of the Lord's return, we should be praying people, Peter says. Watching, no complacency, no carelessness about Christian living. The Lord could come back anytime. So it's a call to watching. It's a call also to serving. To serving. You notice there in Matthew 24, verse 45, Jesus speaks about the faithful and wise servant. And what is the faithful and wise servant doing? He's not sitting with his feet up, watching the telly or surfing the net. He's serving the Lord. He's serving his master. He is getting on with the work the Lord has given him. And that is also part of the call of the signs. Get on with the work Christ gives you. You see, I think it is sad in some Christian circles, a preoccupation with prophecy and all the details of these things can become a substitute for getting on with Christian service. The work of the church, the proclamation of the gospel. It's too easy to sit and puzzle and discuss prophecy and get your little timelines and your charts. And it's great fun. And it's an intellectual exercise. But it can become a substitute for getting out with the gospel and getting on with serving the Lord. And that's what we need to be doing. If we're going to be faithful, wise servants, we will be doing the work the Lord gave us. The certainty of Christ's return is not an excuse for idleness. It never is. The certainty of Christ's return is a stimulus to get on with the work the Lord gives you. And he will not excuse idleness when we stand before him. You know, you're saying, oh, Lord, I was thinking about prophecy and, you know, it nearly figured out and there's a few details I wanted to spend time on. And the Lord will say, I sent you as a servant and a witness. What were you doing? What were you actually doing? It's a call to watching. It's a call to serving. And it's a call to hoping. Call to hoping. In the biblical sense of hope, hope in the Bible is never uncertain. Hope in the Bible is never about maybe, perhaps, I'm not sure. Hope in the Bible is certainty. And the certainty of the return of Christ should make us people of hope. The Lord is coming back at the end of history. Read Matthew 24, read the whole chapter, and it's all in the language of this is what is going to happen. Jesus doesn't say to the disciples, well, I think this might happen. I'm not too sure about that. Maybe the Lord has decreed it will happen. Verse 14, then the end will come. The end will come. Not it might, not a hope, it will. And as Christians, we have a sure hope, a returning Savior who is in heaven reigning at the moment, and he will come back. and he will complete our salvation. And some of the wonders we'll go on to think about as we consider the Bible in the future. Glorious things that are absolutely certain. As we see the signs, that stirs our hope. Sad when Christians see the signs and become discouraged and pessimistic. The Lord is coming back. We are people of hope, and every indication of the signs of the times we see says to us, Christ's coming back. What a great hope we have. A call to watching, a call to serving, and a call to hoping.